information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
To border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
It's a sign, there's no doubt, of the trouble that's about. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 209 from Media Monarchy. It's 3/11/2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, alien fossils, discovery, and glory. Philosophy, Firefly, and Strange Letter, Clyde, Collapse, and Corbett confirmed, Day of Rage, News Purge in the public domain, Anchovy Die-Off, Apocalyptic Stink, No Touch Torture, and Executive Orders. All that and so very much more is in this jam-packed episode 209 for March 11th, 2011, and this is MediaMonarchy.com.
You better pray to the Lord when you see those flying saucers. It may be the coming of the judgment day. It's a sign, there's no doubt, of the trouble that's about. So I say, my friend, you'd better start to pray. They're a terrifying sight as they fly on day and night. It's a warning that we'd better mend our ways. You'd better pray to Lord, when you see those flying saucers, it may be the coming of the judgment day.
The Buchanan Brothers with their 1947 track, You Better Pray to the Lord When You See Those Flying Saucers. And I got to thank my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. Played that song a couple of weeks ago discussing the film version of Battle of Los Angeles, which opens today, 3/11/2011. But all that seems to pale in comparison to everything else that we see going on around the world. But first, ladies and gentlemen, let me formally welcome you back wherever you are in the world, however you're receiving this transmission. I welcome you. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And a huge thanks to all the stations that help syndicate and spread the word about MediaMonarchy.com. Most of all, to the stations that broadcast this show live, like ZeroPointRadio.com, simulcast live as we speak, and blasting out terrestrially. Hello, Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. And thanks to the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net, simulcasting live on the East Coast. TragedyAndHope.com, of course, huge supporters of Media Monarchy, and we are huge supporters of theirs. So thank you. We're on all the social network bells and whistles. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, Twitter.com/Media Monarchy, YouTube.com/Media Monarchy. And of course, you can get these episodes through iTunes. RadioForAll.net has the lower quality audio only. Radio23.org is one of the places where you can get the high quality audio. And of course, archive.org will give you the high, the low, the video, and everything. It's now been a year since we launched a very large fundraising operation again, thanks pretty much entirely to TragedyAndHope.com. And now here we are a year later, and the support is so fantastic. It keeps this site pumping and keeps me moving, and I can pay those pesky dues and bills and fix-its and all those things. So a huge thanks. In the last week or so, thanks to Jana in Colorado and Michael in Alberta for both their generous donations, Sherwin in British Columbia, and Robert in Hong Kong, and all those folks and more, I sent out a thank you package to you containing latest issues of RockCreekFreePress.com and the video archive DVD from CorbettReport.com. And we'll say right here, yes, confirmation. I've emailed back and forth with James Corbett, who lives in Japan, as many of you may know. He is safe. He is fine. Quote, my area of Japan was not affected at all. So, a thanks to all the folks who have been concerned and have been asking questions. I believe he's been getting so many questions, he may be compelled to put up some kind of statement saying, yes, he is okay. And that's what we see when we look at the breaking news right now. West Coast energy operations brace for tsunami. U.S. energy companies with ops in Hawaii, Alaska, and along the coast of California, Oregon, and Washington are on alert for the possibility of a tsunami set off by a massive earthquake off Japan and reaching U.S. shores. Japan nuclear plant operation status after quake, declaring nuclear emergency, evacuating. Meanwhile, here in the States, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker signs bill limiting public unions' rights. And if we could just look at the top stories that Google has mentioned on the side, and it's earthquake, nuclear power, Charlie Sheen. And yes, that circus still rages on. And gosh, I sure wish he would mention 9/11 truth now that 80 billion people are paying attention to his every movement, but nary a peep on the 9/11 truth front. And I'm sure throughout this episode there's going to be a few references, and that's what we do. So if anybody new to the show, welcome. Big Ten Approach. We are nonpartisan. We try and tell the story of the week by collecting mass amounts of news put up on the main flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as Food World Order, Cyberspace War, and Holy Hexes. I had to cut a lot of the content from this episode because there was no way we were going to get through all of it. So, of course, there's going to be a B-side 209 very soon. I want to mention the chat room over on ZeroPointRadio.com. It's nice to have a little ground control helping me here in the studio in the Portland Radio Authority. And, again, the opening track, Pray to the Lord. when you see those flying saucers from the Buchanan brothers, 1947 RCA Victor. The film Battle of Los Angeles gets released today. Clyde Lewis did an episode about that a couple of weeks ago. That's where I grabbed the song. But one of the things I want to throw out and mention is also a horrible film from Steven Spielberg, 1979's Dud 1941. And I streamed it on NavigatingNetflix.com. And it is about the days and weeks after Pearl Harbor attack on the West Coast, and how everybody flips out and thinks it's an invasion. And as bad as the film is, it does kind of shine a light on this paranoia that you'll see in any type of psychological operations, whether it's a War of the Worlds type event or otherwise, and just the misplaced patriotism and gung-ho. I would recommend it, if for nothing else, to just flesh out and perhaps give a perspective on what we're seeing right now. But that song also helps set the stage, and as I said, we cut most of the other site material, but we are going to grab a few things from Food World Order and first Cyberspace War for a story you may or may have not heard. NASA scientist claims to find evidence of life, and we got it from Digital Trends and many other sites, Fox News, many photos. This astonishingly awesome claim comes from Dr. Richard B. Hoover, astrobiologist at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center. Aliens exist, and we have proof.
It's time for a science fight. A paper published Friday in the Journal of Cosmology claims to have conclusive evidence of extraterrestrial life. PopSci discusses the reaction to that paper. Did a NASA scientist find fossilized alien microbes embedded in a 146-year-old meteorite? As this claim emerged over the weekend, the answer from the scientific community so far appears to be something between, what? And no. Richard Hoover, the NASA astrobiologist who wrote that paper, collected samples of a rare type of meteor, cracked them open, and then examined them with an electron microscope. He found loads of unusual microscopic structures in the meteor. Hoover argued the structures looked a lot like bacteria and weren't from contamination. From that, he concluded these structures were proof of extraterrestrial life. Many commentators wondered why the paper was published in an obscure journal rather than Science or Nature. NASA backed away from the paper, questioning its peer-reviewed status in a statement at SpaceRef. While we value the free exchange of ideas, data, and information as part of scientific and technical inquiry, NASA cannot stand behind or support a scientific claim unless it has been peer-reviewed or thoroughly examined by other qualified experts. NASA was also unaware of the recent submission of the paper to the Journal of Cosmology or of the paper's subsequent publication. But the JOC responded by circulating an email published by MSNBC science writer Alan Boyle. The journal contends it is a matter of public record that the organization which publishes science magazines have engaged in illegal anti-competitive practices designed to harm the Journal of Cosmology. The continuing success of JOC poses a competitive threat to their business model. We should not be surprised their hand puppets are complaining the JOC published this article and not them. The journal also claims to have invited over 5,000 scientists to review the paper and post their comments. They touted their openness in a press release. No other paper in the history of science has undergone such a thorough analysis, and no other scientific journal in the history of science has made such a profoundly important paper available to the scientific community for comment before it is published. But the article so far includes none of the more thorough critiques from the science blogs. Microbiologist Rosie Redfield says Hoover didn't adequately rule out possible contamination of the century-old meteor. An important concern with this kind of study is contamination with terrestrial organisms before examination. He doesn't say how the meteorites have been stored before he obtained them, nor how the surfaces of the meteorites were treated before being fractured and examined. Finally, biologist P.Z. Myers dismissed the paper, saying Hoover didn't even demonstrate the structures were biological. Apparently, the authors thought some particular squiggle looked sort of like some photo of a bug. This isn't science, it's pareidolia. They might as well be analyzing Martian satellite photos for pictures that sort of kind of look like artifacts. So are Hoover and the JOC getting a bad rap? Regardless, it's not surprising scientists are invoking Carl Sagan's famous line, "Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence." I'm Jim Flink for Newsy.com. Multiple sources, the real story.
Meanwhile, at the intersection of science fiction and science fact was William Shatner. The 79-year-old actor reprised his role as Star Trek's Captain Kirk to wake up the crew of the space shuttle Discovery at 3:23 a.m. Monday. This is, again, they say it right there, the intersection of science fiction and science fact. These are the thing. This is art and imitating life, imitating politics, and it's ridiculous.
The Space Shuttle Discovery crew got a special wake-up call from William Shatner this morning.
Space, the final frontier.
These have been the voyages of the Space Shuttle Discovery. Her 30-year mission, to seek out new science, to build new outposts, to bring nations together on the final frontier, to boldly go and do what no spacecraft has done before.
And good morning, Houston. And that was the second most popular selection from the song contest for the space shuttle program. And I'd like to thank specifically William Shatner for taking the time to record that special introduction for us.
And we agree, it was really special.
Oh, that's so cool. This makes you want to go up in space like right now. The theme from Star Trek got more than 600,000 votes on a contest to wake up the crew. Discovery is scheduled to undock from the International Space Station later on this morning. This is the shuttle's final mission before it is retired.
And we discussed in recent weeks the perhaps coded meanings behind the names of all the shuttles, that any challengers will be destroyed in our discovery, in our endeavors. And a little sidebar to mention along with that is one of my favorite streaming websites, radio stations, is Soma FM. And they have a channel that plays nothing but NASA and International Space Station audio mixed live with ambient electronic music. And they also have some other great channels like Drone Zone. So Soma FM is fantastic. Meanwhile, as long as we're discussing some cyberspacewar.com action, Glory fails to reach orbit, plummets into ocean. The climate change satellite goes out in a blaze of glory, crashing into the ocean after failing to reach orbit because housing atop the Taurus XL rocket did not separate. That was a $420 million failure. More on that from Universe Today and Bloomberg, and it ties in with the lies about global warming and the coming carbon trade scheme. And we've discussed Friday, April 13th, 2029. Astronomers continue to monitor Apophis. Still interested in the asteroid Apophis, the object of their infatuation will be observable for the next few months. And more on that from, again, universetoday.com. Now we bring it back to some of the latest alternative media. And again, my man Clyde Lewis of groundzeromedia.org. You can also check out groundzerotv.org from my man Mike. And we're going to hear a little bit from him a little bit later in the show. But the latest episode and article from groundzeromedia.org, collapsing the term oil. As you may know, Clyde Lewis is live every Sunday night, number one in the time slot in the Portland metro area on KUFO 101.1 FM. His guest last Sunday was Michael C. Rupert of Crossing the Rubicon and the film Collapse, which you can watch instantly on Navigating Netflix. He also now runs CollapseNet.com. You may know he used to run the website Newsletter from the Wilderness. So I did get to, I called in, I was the last caller on the air. So with the download links, and you can subscribe and get all the episodes in your podcatcher of choice. So you'll hear a little appearance from Media Monarchy at the very end there. And it was great, and I didn't really have too many questions. I just made a few comments about current world geopolitical situations. And as always, we always post Clyde Lewis's articles and radio shows on the site, because again, this is all about helping support other alternative media outlets. And we've got one comment on this post from Pygmy that says, "Dude, stay away from Rupert. He's a major phony, purveyor of the peak oil scam." Whether or not that's a scam, we will leave up to you. And in many of these cases, you should know, and I hope that you would know, and I hope that that's one of the reasons that people find Media Monarchy a compelling listen, is that we don't play the Patriot games, and we don't attack other people. We don't spend our time attacking hosts or websites that we don't like or that we think are agents or aren't good for the movement. We're not here to play those games. That's just one of the many reasons why it's always been, I think, a great fit between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. His last episode before his hiatus, and again, as we discussed last week and as we discussed on the most recent episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, our weekly video series, James has had a death in the family, and he is going to be going back to Canada, where he is from. But as you may know, he's in the sunny climes of Western Japan. And again, we'll mention to you that I've gotten email confirmation, and yes, James Corbett is fine in Japan. But he put up one last podcast, as well as one last video. Episode 178-77 is still the issue. The Muhammad Junaid Babar story put 77 back in the news. And the 77 inquest is due to wrap up hearings this week, ensuring a new wave of attention on the London bombings. But what has been answered by the inquest so far, and what new questions have been raised? This episode 178-77 is still the issue. Talks to Tom Secker and Keelan Balderson about the state of 77 truth and how concerned citizens can move ahead in the pursuit of 77 truth. The last video put up in his new video series called The Last Word. I believe we've had the last word on overpopulation, the last word on terrorism, and now we have the last word on CCTV, when criminals control the cameras. And those videos are fantastic and contain all the fantastic, succinct, concise information in a well-produced video, just like all the others, and they deserve to go viral. So, as we close out that coverage, again, we'll implore you guys out there to send your prayers, send your thoughts, send your vibes, send whatever towards James. And you can think about that. That's someone you know that you can hope and pray for. And then just extrapolate that out to all the people you don't know who are going through hardships all around the world, as we chronicle here week after week. And we're not doing it in a way to try and fearmonger, and we're not saying, oh my God, it's all going to go down tomorrow. But it might. And forewarned is forearmed. And any of the other well-worn phrases that aptly apply. Also want to make a quick mention. Last Sunday, late last Sunday night, after talking to Clyde and Mike, I produced a B-side, episode 208, a multimedia B-side. There's video and audio to go along with it. So, again, I'll remind folks, if you're not subscribed, feeds.feedburner.com/mediamonarchy. That's the way you'll catch it all. And again, all the most important and pertinent links are on the top right of the main page. It seems as though one of the themes that is woven throughout this episode, and there are times where I can see what the themes are, and see it all coming together in the days before the show. And again, yes, there's a lot of pre-production in bringing you this show. And then there are other times where themes and memes will present themselves as I'm collating and kind of putting the finishing move on everything late Thursday night to be able to present this show to you on Friday mornings. One of the themes that has now presented itself is this theme of caring for and helping out your friends and your family and the people you love and the people you know and the people you care about and the people you live around. And that's what this is all about. We don't want to just be collectivists, armchair activists behind the computer. And yes, I'd be as guilty of that as anyone. But I do have a role, and hopefully that role is disseminating well-sourced information. So if this theme of community is woven throughout this episode 209, it is. So we're going to hop over quickly to foodworldorder.com for the one post we're going to cover from foodworldorder.com on this episode 209. All the others we're going to cover in the upcoming B-side episode. And I've never really done anything like this before. So hopefully, you know, I'm not a cry wolf kind of person. I'm not always bugging you about things. But my girlfriend, the amazing Cassie Cohn, is currently raising funds for her latest directing project, working on a music video for a song called Philosophy 101, floss as in floss your teeth, F-L-O-S-S, a health-conscious kids song by a musician that goes by the name of VanOodles.com. And they developed the script where a guy, played by VanOodles, comes home and falls asleep without brushing or flossing his teeth, and he has a series of nightmares where he's chased by awesome puppets made by a local puppet company called MudEyePuppets.org, chasing him down the street, halitosis and gingivitis and a gang of life-sized food particles. So then when he wakes up, of course, he can't wait to floss. There have been some shoots, but there needs to be more done. And you may have heard of Kickstarter as a way online to kind of raise funds. Another site is called Indiegogo.com, and the big difference is if you don't make your stated goal on Kickstarter, you don't get jack. Indiegogo.com is different in that you get the money donated to you and pledged to you. So I'm just going to throw out the special request to all the fantastic supporters out there that if you support Media Monarchy, please consider a donation and help give this project some teeth. Yes, that's a bad pun, but the links are all there. And again, this is all posted up on foodworldorder.com, and you can go to indiegogo.com/philosophy101. And this is what it's about. Again, funding your friend's art, and you can relate that to all the other topics that we talk about. And that's what things are coming back to. I did discuss briefly with Mike Rupert on Ground Zero that I was kind of relieved to hear him say that the Pacific Northwest seems to be well positioned to weather the changes that are coming. Economic changes and agricultural changes and political changes. We can all fund each other's food and art and music. And not in some hippy-dippy way. We're evolving ideas, as Bill Hicks would say. So, again, my friends, I implore you, say, if you were going to donate to Media Monarchy this week, go over to foodworldorder.com and donate to this project. And that's all I'm going to say for you, and I appreciate it. Now, my friends, we are just about a half hour into this episode 209, and again, the pre-production that goes into the show is difficult, and you try and lay it out in a way that all logically makes sense. Yes, there are more important news stories that I could have began with, but I wanted to start with the Buchanan Brothers song, so naturally through that we needed to cover our cyberspace war coverage, and that's the flow, and that's where it came from. So we're going to turn to the 310 news purge, the massive list of headlines, a data dump, if you will, and we're going to go over West Virginia worry and Oregon oddities and murder and mayhem and media memes and history mystery and geopolitics, the econo crash, the drug war, and the latest 9/11 updates. And this 310 news purge is called Here Comes a Chopper to Chop Off Your Head. And so another reference to our friends and our community that we know and that we see. Here's a bizarre way for me to intro this for you. Some of you may know, and some of you may really know and really love, because it has a huge cult following, a miniseries, a TV show called Firefly by Joss Whedon. Well, you may or may not know that the Sci-Fi Channel has picked up rights to the show, and they're going to start to rerun episodes of Firefly.
Firefly has landed.
Let's do this.
And now the genre-bending fan favorite has found a new home.
I'm Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
You have reputation.
The crew of the Serenity had only ever cared about money.
I do the job, and then I get paid.
Until they discovered something worth fighting for.
This is my sister.
That girl is a precious commodity.
You throw them out, I'm leaving too.
Now, this band of renegades...
I never back down from a fight.
...will become the galaxy's most unlikely heroes.
Fantastic, Captain, can you hear me? I'm standing right here.
It's been voted the best space sci-fi series ever.
Well, I'd love to hear that. It's all that.
From Joss Whedon, the creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Bring us in a little closer.
Time for some thrilling heroics.
Strap in, we're taking off. Hang on, travelers.
Firefly lands next Sunday at 8 on Science.
Now, that was the minute-long version of the Firefly commercial, and within that one, you can actually hear the lyrics of the song that they use that's by my friend Steve's band, Strange Letter. They picked up their track, Here Comes a Chopper. They've also just completed an official video for it, and you can go check all this out on strangeletter.net or youtube.com/strangeletter. And I got the opportunity to go see them do a live show the other night at the Goodfoot here in Portland, Oregon, with my man Zach, who you may remember being interviewed here in studio back on episode 200? Steve has been a big supporter of MediaMonarchy.com, so again, as we're talking about paying it back and sharing and doing all of these things here and trying to put it into motion, their track, Here Comes a Chopper, now has a little bit of heat because they did the original video and now it's running in this spot, and I hear Sci-Fi Channel's running it, you know, a half dozen times a day. So, huge respect to them, and we're going to check out the track, Here Comes a Chopper, from Strange Letter.
We'll be right back.
That's a band called Strange Letter, and huge congrats to those guys for getting picked up for the Firefly spot. StrangeLetter.net, and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode 209 from MediaMonarchy.com, and we'll now dive into the disgusting 310 news purge named for the song we just heard, Here Comes a Chopper to Chop Off Your Head, as in, here is a candle to light you to bed. We'll begin with our 9/11 updates, and a great piece from WashingtonsBlog.com reminds us that there is a California ballot initiative being worked on by the Pentagon Papers whistleblowers. That's Daniel Ellsberg and Mike Gravel. When you put those guys together with the 9/11 commissioners themselves, who say they don't believe the official story, then why the hell should we? They're calling for a new investigation. And hopefully outlets like Democracy Now, well, God, maybe they'd pay a little bit of attention to that. They talk to these guys about everything else, but when it comes to 9/11 truth, there's somehow a silence, as we already mentioned earlier. Furthermore, from theintelhub.com, flight records tampering revealed and then buried. This concerns the work of a whistleblower showing that the records were altered. Were there flights on that morning or weren't there? Meanwhile, ElPasoTimes.com reporting on ex-FBI informant involved in shooting. The man who allegedly tried to run down an El Paso police officer on Thursday reportedly infiltrated terror cells for the FBI and had claimed on a national television interview that the 9/11 terror attacks could have been prevented. Eli Assad, aged 38, was arrested near the University of Texas at El Paso after his SUV rolled over and police had fired at him during an early morning chase. In a 2009 interview on ABC News, Assad told how he infiltrated terror cells and said the FBI missed the opportunity to foil the 9/11 attacks. A piece on truthdig.com, still in the dark about 9/11, this relating to the furthering of indefinite detentions, which we're going to get to later in this episode. And our last piece of 9/11 related updates, NYPD helicopter video of 9/11 attack surfaces. A newly released video shows the World Trade Center attack from the vantage point of an NYPD helicopter. According to Gawker, NIST requested the 17-minute video through the Freedom of Information Act, and the video was sent anonymously to the secret sharing website Cryptome, which posted it. It's on their YouTube site. The Institute investigated the 9/11 attacks. And this video is actually 17 plus minutes long, but fortunately, this posting that's just on Yahoo News has some 10,000 plus comments. And as just one of the many note, you can tell the video's been edited at about the 3.5 minute mark. So what else isn't in there? Furthermore, down the news purge, we go to the drug war, where David Simon, the creator and executive producer of HBO's The Wire, said the war on drugs had devolved into a war on the underclass, mentioning this after Wire actress Felicia Pearson was arrested in Baltimore on drug charges. 30-year-old Pearson served a prison sentence for murder before joining the cast of The Wire, a television drama series about the inner city life in Baltimore that premiered in 2002 and ended five seasons later in 2008. Pearson and over 60 others were arrested on Thursday as part of a five-month investigation by the DEA and Baltimore police, this according to the Baltimore Sun. So, of course, yes, David Simon is 100% correct. It is a war on the underclass. The only part that he's maybe not correct is that it's devolved into that. We would say it began as that. Meanwhile, from KPTV, pot growers use alligator to protect their stash. And our last note on the drug war, and I checked, and I was double-checking to make sure this wasn't the same exact story, because we covered in January a situation where kids accidentally ate pot cookies, and here we have it again in California, accidentally eating marijuana cookies.
At lunchtime, we ate it, but I ate a little bit. Some of them ate a lot.
After eating a piece of her classmate's cookie on the playground, this fifth grader's mom got an unsettling phone call.
The principal was calling me yesterday. It said Trisha and my daughter, there's something wrong with her.
Trisha was one of a group of fifth graders who ate cannabis cookies. It happened during the lunch hour at Grace Patterson Elementary School in Vallejo yesterday.
I was scared because just coming from school and issues like that, you know.
A campus supervisor found one of the cookie wrappers on the playground.
The principal was looking at it and saw on the back in small writing it said medicinal cannabis.
A Vallejo school's spokeswoman says the student who brought the cookies to the school told police he got them for free.
A child yesterday on the way to school stopped at a store, and a store employee evidently gave him two packages of one cookie each.
We talked to that store clerk this morning. Jose Chavez says one of his regular customers left the packaged cookies on this counter yesterday, and he let the boy take them.
So living over here, the little kid is coming, talk to me like that, and oh, I do it good. Good morning, my friend. Good morning. And oh, your bus is coming. You want a cookie? Go ahead. That's all.
Chavez says he didn't realize what was in those cookies until police came to talk to him.
Yeah, I'm scared because, you know, I have a voice too.
Vallejo police say they're still trying to identify and locate the customer who may have left those cookies on the counter yesterday. In Vallejo, Ali Rasmus, KTVU, Channel 2 News.
That's all for our disturbing drug war notes. And as we go alphabetically down the news purge, that brings us to the Econo Crash updates and an interesting article from the New York Times. And they're one of the biggest in the world, so of course they have pretty impressive articles. Broke Town USA discussing our ghost towns popping up everywhere. Meanwhile, from Main Street, eliminating $1 bills could save billions. Washington has come down with a case of fiscal fever as Obama proposes everything from spending freezes on domestic programs to selling off unused government property to bring the budget back in line. Now, one study argues that the government can save billions of dollars simply by making a change to the currency itself. Earlier this month, the U.S. Government Accountability Office issued a formal proposal to the Treasury and Federal Reserve, noting that if it eliminated the $1 bill and replaced it with a $1 coin, the country could save roughly $5.5 billion during the next 30 years. The reason, according to the agency's report, is that dollar bills have a shorter lifespan than dollar coins because they wear much faster, which in turn requires the government to spend more to print new bills. The GAO estimates that phasing out dollar bills in favor of coins would require a four-year transition period during which the government invests in the new currency, but following that, the government could save an expected $522 million each year from the change. Unfortunately, as the GAO notes, there's one problem with the plan. When given a choice between dollar coins and dollar bills, Americans always choose bills. And the demonization of cash continues. Our final note on Econo Crash relates pretty directly to our first story, Broke Town USA. And this comes from CBS News, and this is a segment from last Sunday's 2020. So the full video is about 13 or 14 minutes long, but we'll just take a little extract here on homeless children and the hard times generation.
Unemployment improved a bit last month, but it's still nearly 9%. And the trouble is job creation is so slow, it will be years before we get back to 7.5 million jobs lost in the Great Recession. American families have been falling out of the middle class in record numbers. The combination of lost jobs and millions of foreclosures means a lot of folks are homeless and hungry for the first time in their lives. One of the consequences of the recession that you don't hear much about is the record number of children descending into poverty. The government considers a family of four to be impoverished if they take in less than $22,000 a year. Based on that standard and government projections of unemployment, it is estimated the poverty rate for kids in this country will soon hit 25%. Those children would be the largest American generation to be raised in hard times since the Great Depression.
The story will continue in a moment.
In Seminole County near Orlando, Florida, so many kids have lost their homes, school buses now stop at dozens of cheap motels where families crowd into rooms living week to week. 11-year-old Destiny Corpy joined the line at this motel a year ago.
I never really noticed what people were actually going through until now, until we're actually going through it too.
David and Teresa Corfee never imagined their family homeless. Together, they were making about $40 an hour detailing expensive cars. There was a three-bedroom home, vacations, extras for the kids. But both jobs went, and then the house. Evicted, they found that the homeless shelters wanted to split their family up, boys and girls.
That was definitely something that I wasn't going to have, was being separated at a time like this. I figured at a time like this that we needed to be together more than anything.
So David, Teresa, Destiny, George, and Chance moved into their van.
The hard times generation, or as Gerald Celente calls it, the greatest depression, coming soon to a broke town USA near you. We now move to our geopolitical updates, and the first few postings were all pre-311, today's date, today's projected day of rage. And the first is from the Economic Collapse blog, "Will Saudi Day of Rage send oil prices into unprecedented territory?" Meanwhile, from Fortune, speculators double down on oil. And from the Washington Post, "Day of Rage Friday, oil prices spike, witnesses say gunfire at protest." This was all leading up to. I just grabbed, just a little bit ago, going back to just about 2 hours ago from the Los Angeles Times, "Saudi Arabia Day of Rage protest fizzles. Few turn out for a day of rage protest that had been talked about for weeks in Saudi Arabia. The call for demonstrations, organized on Facebook and by word of mouth, had drawn a stern response from the government. A call for protests in Saudi Arabia that had been talked about for weeks drew only a handful of people Friday, allowing the kingdom to keep at bay for now the waves of political unrest that have battered the Middle East and North Africa. In the end, the day of rage, organized on Facebook and by word of mouth, fizzled. No protests occurred in any Saudi cities except for a small demonstration in Al-Asa in the rest of Eastern Province," said Major General Mansour Turki of the Interior Ministry. No phone calls were returned seeking comment on the events. The prospect of street protests in the highly conservative kingdom provoked people's curiosity, but few Saudis expected a big turnout. So, there you have it. And we have referenced before that this term and this idea put into action in these color revolutions, these intelligence operations, as we discussed last week, the Libyan situation, which we'll get a few brief updates here in just a moment, is that Libya is one of the most advanced African nations, and the most advanced, and we discussed all that on the David Rothscum article last week. So you should ask yourself, why are these things happening now? Why are they suddenly all being demonized? And it's got to be about resources. That's what the grand chessboard is all about. That's what Brzezinski said. So, meanwhile, from CNBC, "Attack on Iraq pipeline halts oil exports." Land Destroyer noting, U.S. Department of Imperial Expansion noting the actual mission statement of the State Department and comparing it with its original mission statement. Suppose we could reference what Captain Kirk said, that, you know, we're going to build new outposts. Really? Is that's really your mission? Is that your constitutional mandate? Meanwhile, last Friday, and this was fascinating to watch spill out in real time on Twitter, and again, we have a relatively active Twitter feed on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. In Egypt, protesters raid on Cairo State Security Headquarters. They basically found a way in through a mosque, I believe, and busted their way into the SS. That's from the BBC, but from Gizmodo, what did we find inside there? Well, secret FBI and CIA documents and porno found inside Egypt's terror police headquarters. And so we'll move to our Libyan updates, and we do have a good bit of clips to go over that hopefully can shed some light on this kind of situation. And again, we pull media from all around, and just because I add a link to it or just because we play a clip of it doesn't necessarily mean I wholeheartedly endorse this. It's a way to give both left and phony right and all the fake left-right paradigm. We can blast through it all by displaying it all. So, NATO has well undertaken 24/7 surveillance of Libyan airspace, but then what?
We know France, Britain, U.S., they're right. Talking about possible resolution with language to include a no-fly zone.
Right, but then we have to be very careful with that because nothing is imminent. This is potentially language being included in a resolution. You have to keep in mind that Russia and China, both permanent members of the U.N. Security Council, are likely to oppose any kind of military intervention. In fact, the Russian foreign minister today said the Libyans are going to have to solve their problems by themselves. And importantly, this language would be trigger-based, not timeline-based. In other words, there would have to be an increase in the problems on the ground for them to consider it.
A tangible catalyst.
Right.
Okay. What about the countries? There are some countries who are calling for it.
And they're calling for it with some urgency. I'm talking about the Gulf countries. Mm-hmm. This would include the Gulf Cooperation Council countries, whether it's the UAE, Dubai, Qatar. Mm-hmm. Those countries are saying the United Nations has to act. It has to act quickly in order to protect civilians in these battle zones in northern, in northwest and in northeast Libya as well. Now we're seeing that.
And now, just this afternoon, we're hearing from NATO. They're out surveying the country.
Exactly. And it's important because if a no-fly zone, in fact, is voted upon, and everybody agrees on the concept of a no-fly zone, which, by the way, is really not a battle that has been won in any way, in that case, what happens? Who enforces it? Because enforcing a no-fly zone...
That's an excellent question.
It's, right. You know, it would be NATO. But that would mean that you are willing to shoot planes out of the sky if somebody actually breaks a no-fly zone over the skies of Libya. Mm-hmm. So this is not an easy thing. It's not something diplomatically people are agreeing on, countries are agreeing on, and it's not something militarily that's easy to implement and get everybody on board, especially with a country like the United States that's already engaged in two war zones in Iraq and Afghanistan. Despite the scale down in Iraq, there's still a military presence there. Is there appetite inside of each country? All those are questions that are still hanging.
Given the fact that there is a military presence in those two countries, yeah. There is also, now to quote Jay Carney today in the White House briefing, an option of sending American troops to Libya. What does that mean?
It just means nothing is off the table, but not high on the list. That's also what he added after saying not ruled out. We're talking about ground troops. So if the no-fly zone is something difficult to agree on, you can imagine the possibility of ground troops as well being something really further down the line. And it's important that the trigger-based, the based on triggers, that language is important. It just means we're not setting a timeline. We're not saying in 6 weeks if things don't improve, we are going to impose a no-fly zone. It means if things escalate. And there's a huge difference between those two things.
It'll be interesting to see what information we can get from NATO after they have taken a survey of the scene.
Right. They're saying that this is something that's going to give them a more accurate idea of what's actually going on the ground in Libya.
In real time. Mm-hmm. Hala Gharani, thank you.
NATO, which has its own surveillance aircraft, is flying them, shall we say, around Libya. Not very likely they're flying into Libyan airspace, but over the Mediterranean and basically keeping an eye on Libyan air traffic control, radars often, which involve commercial airport radars, and just keeping an eye 24/7 now on what is happening in Libyan airspace. Of course, the discussion around the international community is whether or not to establish a no-fly zone over Libya, to go all the way into doing that, which would essentially be a military operation going into Libyan airspace, taking out their radars, taking out some of their surface-to-air missile sites. it's a tough call right now. The Obama administration says that option remains on the table. There's discussion at the UN, there's discussion in NATO, but nobody really willing at this point to take that additional step. Still, the bottom line, very little international stomach for taking outright military action against the Gaddafi regime. Kate?
Barbara, we know that there are obviously these conversations about the possibility or not a possibility of the no-fly zone, but what are the other options in terms of a range of response from the international community? Are we talking about that yet?
Yeah, I think the focus right now really remains on humanitarian relief operations. You have the international community flying or trying to fly tens of thousands of those refugees, namely Egyptians and Bangladeshis, off the Tunisian border next door. These people have fled the violence in Libya and get them back to their homes. There are U.S. warships out in the Mediterranean standing by, we are told, ready for additional humanitarian relief operations, ready to offer medical assistance. One of the things that is going to be very tough is, you know, there are so many casualties inside Libya amongst civilians. What do you do to try and get medical aid to these people without, putting troops on the ground inside Libya, for which the U.S. has no real stomach at the moment? So these kinds of very tough humanitarian questions. And still, Kate, there is very deep concern at the Pentagon and across Washington about what some people call the nightmare scenario. What if at the last minute Gaddafi forces really open up on the Libyan people and you have mass civilian casualties? Then what does the international community do?
Absolutely. It seems there's no easy solution, no easy choice to make at this point. Barbara Starr at the Pentagon for us. Thanks so much, Barbara. We're also keeping a close eye on how the instability in the Arab world is impacting your wallet. We've been talking about this quite a bit. This morning, world oil prices have eased a bit after reports that OPEC may increase its output. Prices are still hovering around $105 a barrel, and that's the highest in nearly 2.5 years. And some gas prices, of course, you care about. This time yesterday, we told you unleaded was averaging $3.51 a gallon. Today, Americans are paying a penny more, an average of $3.52. Will it ever go down? We will be watching.
Now, I apologize for the audio quality of that clip, but hopefully you were able to make out the discussions about this trigger-based language so that they would need some type of catalyzing, catastrophic event. So if there were a problem, you know, they would have to gauge their reaction so that they could offer their solution to bring order out of chaos. So, as was just noted over in the chat room on ZeroPointRadio.com, another Gulf of Tonkin coming soon? ? Meanwhile, VeteransToday.com asking the question, or maybe they're not even asking. Maybe we'll turn it into a question. The Benghazi explosion was a tactical nuke used by Gaddafi. Meanwhile, UN Council postpones their consideration of a report praising Libya's human rights record, as we've already discussed to you. Well, highly advanced, but now in this propagandistic situation, we can't have reports coming out praising their fantastic human rights record. That's from Fox News. Meanwhile, from the Daily Mail, MI6 and SAS, British secret soldiers working together to take control in Libya. And the Christian Science Monitor says U.S. military in Tripoli? It's happened before. That's why it's in the song. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. Meanwhile, anti-government protesters in Yemen may have been hit with nerve gas. That's coming from the Australian. And we have more Libyan action. One other note, and as I always remind you, we're watching the memes and the names, the clusters and the copycat effect, or the Twilight language, if you will. Malta primes for Libyan action.
Malta's airport has been hosting planes from at least 7 NATO nations. In the island's main harbour, a South Korean destroyer, which has been evacuating workers from Libya. Military vessels from a number of NATO countries are just off the coast.
With AWACS spy aircraft overhead and a fleet of Western naval vessels offshore, there is concern here in Malta, an EU nation, but one that prizes itself on its neutrality. A former Prime Minister of Malta told me he doesn't believe Western powers when they say they're only here to evacuate their nationals.
The economic crisis, because if I were in their place, I would exploit the opportunity I have of the strategic position to spy and to do all that is necessary in preparation of any military attack. So it's not a question of evacuation only. They are exploiting also the circumstances for their own ends.
It's adding to concern here that this island's neutrality is slowly being eroded. James Bay's Al Jazeera, Malta.
Meanwhile, back here in the North American Union, do you remember the female Mexican police chief, 20-year-old, who took the gig? She must have figured something was going to go down because she and her family disappeared, and she was fired when she disappeared, and she is now applying for U.S. asylum all the while in hiding. More on that from The Guardian. And our last note on the geopolitical situation, we've got the full videos and even the transcript for you, wherein you don't actually hear her say what the Sydney Morning Herald puts in their headline. Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard addresses joint session of Congress, says U.S. must be at the center of a new world order.
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the Honorable Julia Gillard, Prime Minister of Australia.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, Mr. President pro tempore, distinguished members of the Senate and the House, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I'm the fourth Australian Prime Minister to address you. Like them, I take your invitation as a great honour. Like them, I accept it on behalf of Australia. Since 1950, Australian Prime Ministers Robert Menzies, Bob Hawke and John Howard have come here, speaking for all the Australian people, through you to all the people of the United States. They each came with a simple message, a message which has been true in war and peace, a message which has been true in hardship and prosperity, in the Cold War and in the New World. A message I repeat to you today. Distinguished members of the Senate and the House, you have a true friend down under.
Oh, yes. Now, that was Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard addressing Congress, and you heard right there within that clip, just in the first opening sentences, she does say, New World. She mentions that a good half a dozen times, and again, we provide the transcript link for you. However, she does not utter the exact phrase that pays, New World Order, so it's interesting that the Sydney Morning Herald took it upon themselves to just put that in the headline. Aussie PM says U.S. must be at the center of New World Order. Ladies and gentlemen, we are well into hour number two on episode 209. It's 3/11/2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and of course, huge thanks to the stations that syndicate and rebroadcast and carry this show, like ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, Free Radio Olympia, Berkeley Liberation Radio, Patriot Radio, Ground Zero Radio, and all the others. Huge thanks. Huge support. You don't have to ask. You can just replay it. It's all fair use. It's all public domain. It's all meant to share and grow. Okay. We took care of our business, and now we got to keep moving. Down the news purge. We've made it to History Mystery, where The Upshot and The Telegraph reporting on new photos of Hitler's wife stir the web, Eva Braun photo album, released by, wouldn't you know it, Skull and Bones Only Life magazine. And we included the amazing photo of Eva Braun dressed up in blackface like Al Jolson. Meanwhile, the star eyewitness who named the Queen of England in the abduction of Aboriginal children dies suddenly in a Vancouver hospital. That comes from ITCCS.org, and that is the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. And we also have more background from RevHH.org on Canada's Holocaust and the mass graves of Aboriginal children. And that disturbing note doesn't set the table for where we'll go next with our media and meme coverage. And we begin with an interesting story from Threat Level. Supreme Court deciding whether Congress may copyright public domain works. The Supreme Court agreed Monday to decide whether Congress may take works out of the public domain and grant them copyright status. A federal appeals panel reversing a lower court ruled in July against a group of orchestra conductors, educators, performers, publishers, film archivists, and motion picture distributors who have relied on artistic works in the public domain for their livelihoods. The 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals set aside arguments that their First Amendment rights were breached because they could no longer exploit the works without paying royalties. For a variety of reasons, the works at issue, which are foreign and were produced decades ago, became part of the public domain in the U.S., but were still copyrighted overseas. In 1994, Congress adopted legislation to move the works back into copyright so U.S. policy would comport with an international copyright treaty known as the Berne Convention. B-E-R-N-E. Isn't it interesting that some of the works at issue include H.G. Wells' Things to Come, Fritz Lang's Metropolis, and the musical compositions of Igor Stravinsky? The government argued that Congress adopted what was known as Section 514 for its indisputable compliance with the convention and to remedy historic inequities of foreign authors who lost or never obtained copyrights in the United States. There are interesting links, and you can follow the whole court record in the case from SCOTUSblog.com. So, Supreme Court deciding whether Congress may make copyright or may copyright public domain works. There's a lot of words there to trip over. And in a completely unrelated note, another executive order, and we'll cover some of the others in the remainder of the show, establishment of the Intellectual Property Enforcement Advisory Committees, with a link to whitehouse.gov for you. A story that goes back to the end of February that I had missed. From the Los Angeles Times, UN leader asks Hollywood for help in fight against global climate change. Ban Ki-moon of the Moonies, the normally buttoned-up Secretary General of the UN, swept into L.A. during Oscar week, playing the role of Hollywood pitchman. His message, make global warming a hot issue. I need your support, he told entertainment industry insiders during a day-long forum that focused on recent heat waves, floods, fires, and drought, which scientists link to human-induced climate change. Animate these stories, Bond pleaded. Set them to music. Give them life. Together we can have a blockbuster impact on the world. If the pitch sounds a tad desperate, it's not surprising. In recent years, public concern over climate change has plummeted in the polls. UN efforts to craft a new global climate treaty have been unsuccessful, and Congress has rejected federal legislation to curb greenhouse gas emissions. The UN has long courted such celebrities as Audrey Hepburn, Mia Farrow, George Clooney, and Angelina Jolie to be useful idiots, goodwill ambassadors for peacekeeping and anti-poverty efforts. Because somehow the IMF and the World Bank and the international banksters and gangsters just can't solve the problems that George Clooney can take care of. And here we go. From Sky News, Charlie Sheen to join Sean Penn in Haiti. as part of an aid trip following Haiti's 2009 earthquake. Remember that? Meanwhile, Daddy Martin Sheen is in Malta, quote-unquote, taking a break from everything. More on that from AOLNews.com. Meanwhile, TMZ reporting David Arquette was in a car crash, but he tweeted and said, "It's okay, Tiger's blood runs through my veins. You may see Tiger's blood showing up again and again." This is something that, again, Sheen claims to drink in this amazing psychological operation. Then again, if we glance back to Google News right now, we see that the top stories are nuclear power, earthquake, Charlie Sheen. And no mention of 9/11 truth or ending the war while the world's eyes are watching this shenanigan, charade, bread and circus go on and on and on. And it gets worse. Blade Runner returns, Alcon Entertainment locking up the rights for prequels and sequels to the 1982 movie. More on that from New York Daily News. Meanwhile, the original bassist for Alice in Chains, Mike Starr, died at the age of 44. No word yet on the cause of death. And a piece from the Wall Street Journal that's quite interesting and did get a good bit of coverage, fortunately. TV's next wave, tuning into you. Data gathering firms and tech companies are aggressively matching people's TV viewing behavior with other personal data, in some cases, prescription drug records obtained from insurers, and using it to help advertisers buy ads targeted to shows watched by certain kinds of people. At the same time, cable and satellite companies are testing and developing new systems designed to show households highly targeted ads. The goal? Emulate the sophisticated tracking widely used on people's personal computers with new technology that reaches the living room. One of the most advanced companies, Cablevision Systems Corporation, has rolled out a system that can show entirely different commercials in real time to different households tuned to the same program. It can deliver targeted ads to all the company's 3 million subscribers concentrated in New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey. In an early test of Cablevision's technology, the U.S. Army used it to target 4 different recruitment ads to different categories of viewers. Ah, what a brave new world. Our last few notes on the media memes, the related to the TV story from Grist, meet the zero energy transparent TV made of future glass, and it is quite impressive to look at. There's a little demo video, you can check it out. And our last media meme note is kind of a funny one. King's Speech producer learns why you don't give your best picture Oscar to your 15-month-old infant. She drops and breaks it. Flipping to murder and mayhem and the story we have been discussing several times over the last few weeks. I had never really heard of this guy before, but then suddenly I keep seeing all these horror stories. And of course, it ties in and connects, if not directly, at least in spirit, to the Franklin scandal. Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire pedophile, kept a secret journal which listed underage victims and celebrity guests he entertained. Now, Cryptogon.com has a great posting on this that collects several different articles from the Daily Mail and the Telegraph and even some mirrored sites. And we'll get to the fortunately bolded part where we'll show the emphasis from the Daily Mail. Epstein's palatial houses were secretly covered by a network of hidden video cameras, raising concerns that compromising footage exists of a number of rich and powerful individuals useful to Epstein's work as a money manager. The financier's little black book of contacts encompasses every conceivable sphere of influence, from politics and show business to business and royalty. It lists numbers for former presidents, government ministers, state senators, rock stars, actors, and members of the British aristocracy, all involved in this occult abuse entrapment scheme. And again, if you're not familiar with the Franklin scandal, go to thefranklinscandal.com and just dive into the work of Nick Bryant. Meanwhile, on a positive note, the death penalty abolished in Illinois with a new law. More on that from CBS News. And our final three murder and mayhem notes are interesting. as we connect copycat memes that we see woven throughout our pop culture, if you will. So from CNN and all headline news first, after the winning shot in his team's perfect season, team basketball star instantly drops dead of a heart attack. Meanwhile, Florida prep track athlete dead after collapsing during her training session, and then a Colorado teen collapses during a rugby match and dies. We now move to our Oregon oddities, where we first note, and the billboard was up here for several weeks, and unfortunately nobody could find the time to go deface it. Now they've already changed it because it's coming very soon, just next week here. And you can go to getmotivated.com to learn more about the Get Motivated Business Seminar coming to Portland next week at the Rose Garden, featuring Rudolph Giuliani, Colin Powell, Laura Bush, Steve Forbes, Terry Bradshaw, and Bill Cosby. What did he do to find himself in such a mess of useful idiots, to use that phrase again? And yes, also war criminals and liars like Giuliani and Powell and Laura Bush. So we'll see if anybody comes out to greet some of those folks. It could be quite interesting. And again, we note we've also got some of the... I forget exactly the organization, but we've got folks like Paul Volcker and Stanley McChrystal coming to town soon to spout off their nonsense as well. But let's get our other related Oregon oddities first from my man Marshall, who I met here in Portland, Oregon. He came out to the publicity stunt that myself and Clyde Lewis pulled off last year for the 9th anniversary of 9/11. Where we burned the 9/11 Commission report, and one news station came out and covered it. You can watch that whole video on youtube.com/mediamonarchy. Marshall's posted up the first part of hopefully a longer series on Esoteric Portland. Part one, The Empire Never Ended, and among other things, it does get into Statue of Columbia, that of course is always between the two pillars that symbolize Boaz and Jacob, and it's all ancient Babylon mystery school stuff, and our own Portlandia statue here in the city between the two columns. Meanwhile, Salem, Oregon store robber nearly loses his pants. The droopy drawers bandit is still at large, and for some reason that story got lots of coverage because everybody loves funny surveillance footage of stupid criminals. But on a more important note, city council meeting on Joint Terrorism Task Force canceled. Portland Mayor Sam Adams and city council members have canceled this week's meeting about rejoining the Joint Terrorism Task Force after receiving new input from federal agencies. According to City Hall, the new info directly affects the mayor's proposal regarding Portland's potential involvement with the task force. This week's meeting on the proposal has been canceled to give the mayor and city council members time to review the new info. Plans to release a public draft of the proposal have also been delayed. We have noted for you here, of course, Portland opted out of the task force in 2005, but of course, city leaders revisited the idea of opting back in after a terror threat at the annual tree lighting ceremony on Black Friday. The Portland Patsy tree bomber, funded and trained every step of the way by the Federal Bureau of Informants and Agent Provocateurs. So we'll wrap up our Oregon oddity coverage with directly related to this Joint Terrorism Task Force and the aforementioned Mohawk Mike, who helps put together videos for GroundZeroTV.org on the scene at a recent demonstration downtown where, resoundingly, Portland says no to the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
Hey, I'm just curious, but what's got you out here to City Hall joining me to oppose the Joint Terrorism Task Force? And who are you? What are you guys
up to? Well, sure. I work with a group called Iraq Veterans Against the War. I also work with a group called Veterans for Peace. And in the past, we've had the FBI persecute us as peace activists. They've infiltrated our groups and sent in provocateurs and spied on us generally. And I'm pretty opposed to that. Like, I don't think it's right for our government, who are just legally, constitutionally trying to change around, addressing our grievances towards them. Yet they send people after us to infiltrate us. So I'm out here trying to prevent the city of Portland from getting a closer relationship with the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which would basically deputize Portland police officers to carry out federal law.
So I was quite disappointed because I was hoping, you know, I have a lot of anxiety about this thing, you know,
sure.
Because I just want it to be over with so I can adjust to having a secret police force in my town or not. So can you give us a little background on what happened? You know, apparently there's so much snow on the ground, you know, that they can't show up, right?
Well, so here's what happened is yesterday at 2 o'clock, Mayor Adams, he made an announcement at his office. It was around 2 p.m., sometime around 1 or 2. And he said, recording this, that... we are going to delay the hearings for the Joint Terrorism Task Force because there's probable weather issues, but also that the contract that they were planning on drafting wasn't quite ready yet. So I contacted one of my activist friends who's been helping me plan this, and he says, well, you know, I think there's more to that story there. And I said, what do you mean? And he explains that he believes that what's going on is, and I believe this now too, that instead of the city asking the question, you know, should we join the Joint Terrorism Task Force, the mayor would rather have us comment on an already drafted contract. And unfortunately, that contract was not drafted already. And so in 2 weeks, when the rally is going to be at March 10th at 12:30 p.m. here at City Hall, we'll actually be commenting on a contract, a formalized contract, rather than just the validity of even drafting the contract. So that's the difference. That's what's going on. And they use the excuse that, well, maybe there's some snow that's going to fall, but it's bogus. He's trying to draft this contract and have the city talk about that and not the validity of if we should even draft the contract.
So, of course, that clip is discussing the first time they canceled the meeting with the references to the snow there and the March 10th, which, of course, was yesterday. So the article I read to you before that clip concerns what would be the second cancellation of this meeting. Now, that video is linked up for you, and I implore you to go check out the full nearly 15-minute clip, and it's on the improbably named youtube.com/catrapesdog99. So hat tip to my man Mohawk Mike. And again, everybody out there that I'm fortunate enough to be connected to, everybody sharing information. Finally, on this news purge, West Virginia worry. And there's a piece that we're going to go over on the upcoming episode on Food World Order concerning Oregon and a new generation of farmers. But on this same day, in that same issue of the New York Times, as I was checking it out at work, there was a good one about Oregon and, of course, a bad one about West Virginia. A large West Virginia hospital seriously over-radiated patients suspected of having strokes with CT scans for more than a year after similar episodes prompted federal officials to alert hospitals nationwide to be especially careful when using those type of scans, interviews and documents show. The patients at Cabell Huntington Hospital in Huntington, West Virginia, were overdosed with radiation until late November, records showed, even after the FDA had publicly issued its final report on hundreds of overdoses involving brain scans in other hospitals. West Virginia Hospital over-radiated brain scan patients, records show. So, unfortunately, there's more to come on West Virginia worry. I overheard this on the radio at work, and I think it was some sports show that somebody had on, but I heard them mention, and the state that is the bottom of the list of the survey revealing the nation's happiest states was, of course, my home state of West Virginia. We link you to the article from WebMD.com that gets into this, and we do have an op-ed from the Marshall Parthenon, the newspaper from Marshall University, that notes that this survey is wrong. West Virginia is a happy state. Meanwhile, MSHA will not release crucial documents related to the Upper Big Branch mine explosion, which we covered quite extensively for you last year in April on MediaMonarchy.com. Meanwhile, Manchin calls out Obama on budget cuts. That's from the Charleston Gazette. And the news, state-of-the-art mobile command center unveiled at the state capitol. And an update on the story of Frank Buckles that we discussed for you last week. The last vet standing, the last known World War I veteran, Frank Buckles, died in Charlestown, West Virginia. Two interesting updates. The first from Journal News. Buckles' family upset that veteran might not be honored at the Capitol. There's now some question as to whether or not where or whether he will be honored. And the other thing I forgot to mention for you last week is that Frank Buckles was a 33rd degree Mason. So take that for whatever that's worth. Our last note comes from CopycatEffect.com. Linda Scarberry, the quote-unquote first eyewitness of Mothman, has passed away. Sinister forces, indeed. That's the way we will close out that news purge, my friends. And it continues. And I saw something that reminded me that the day before the massive New Zealand earthquake, which we just saw just over a week ago, that there was a massive fish die-off. It was several weeks ago we began the show with the Police song, Canary in a Coal Mine, as we were discussing all of these mass animal die-offs, the birds, the cows, the fish, all of these things. And it continues to happen. Millions of dead anchovies float to the surface on Redondo Beach in California. And the article from the San Francisco Guardian, millions of fish died in a Southern California marina, and a spokeswoman says they apparently suffocated.
This somewhat unprecedented fish, what do you call this, fish death?
Die-off. You know, I mean, tens of thousands at the minimum. Those are fish down there in the King Harbor area here, Steve. This is right on the border of Hermosa Beach and Redondo Beach. It's in Redondo Beach proper here, this very popular harbor that just celebrated its 50-year anniversary. And the entire north end of the harbor here is just laced with these dead fish. We have a lifeguard, a county lifeguard boat now going to inspect this. Obviously, marine biologists have been called out. We have no idea what has caused this massive fish die. The only thing unique, Steve, that happened last night was the tremendous winds that were blowing through this area. I heard them. They weren't only blowing in the valley, but also along the ocean.
You've had winds before, Rick, and we've never seen anything
like
this.
How would that affect the fish that are swimming underneath? I don't understand.
Well, just that the way that the fish are positioned here in the harbor, almost like something, you know, pushed the fish inland. If they perhaps died out at sea and were pushed inland by that tremendous current and that force.
They're not along
the beach. That's the thing. We checked out the sand outside the harbor. We checked out the Hermosa Beach Pier down towards
the
Redondo Beach Breakwater. Nothing on the sand there. Redondo Pier southward towards Topaz Street. Nothing. They're all just locked in this harbor. Perhaps some sort of chemical reaction, maybe something in the water. Again, I hate to speculate, and I know these waters. These are the waters I grew up in. I still spend time in, and I've never seen anything like this. This massive fish die-off.
And just look at this, Rick. I mean, you can't even begin to estimate how many fish we see in this die-off.
No, I mean, my source that texted me said thousands, and I'm like, oh yeah, right. Yeah. And then I get over it, and we're talking tens of thousands.
At least hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
You're looking at 1,000 right in that shot.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, to think they're all piled up because it's so dense and white in some areas, they're all on top of each other.
No, we did notice a few that were still kind of fluttering down there, still alive.
Sergeant Phil Keenan, Redondo Beach Police Department. Sergeant, good morning.
Good morning.
What's going on here?
Well, that's a good question. What we know is we have millions of dead anchovies, which is a bait fish. We have millions of them that are dead. And even the ones you can see on the surface, there's ones on the bottom about a foot deep all throughout the basin here. And the hypothesis right now on why they're dying off is possibly that a large school of anchovies came into the harbor and there wasn't enough oxygen to support them. That's possibly what's going on, but we do have experts coming to determine exactly why this happened.
How bad is the smell out there right now? Is it going to get a lot worse?
You know, it's going to get a lot worse. It's not that bad right now. It's almost like a one-day-old dead fish. If you smelled it at the fish shop, you'd say, no, I don't want that one.
Right.
But by this afternoon, it's going to be horrific, and that's how we're dealing with it, is a hazardous waste and just the logistics of getting hundreds and thousands of tons of dead bait fish to trash. We're determining whether we should take it out to sea and dump it.
Right.
And that's being decided by Fish and Game, or we should put it in dumpsters, and that's still to be decided.
Yikes.
All right, Sergeant, thank you for that report. We appreciate it. We'll be checking with you through the course of the day, trying to figure out the mystery of this huge, huge fish die-off.
Now, fortunately, if you Google dead anchovies, MediaMonarchy.com is one of the top results. And fortunately for you, I refrained and restrained myself from playing the live Morrissey cover of Patti Smith's song, Redondo Beach. So, meanwhile, from GodDiscussion.com, millions of dead fish in California calls apocalyptic stink. But we'll shift to all our other related BioWars EnviroHealth updates, like something out of American Beauty, interesting video from CBS News of a hypnotic slow tornado that is, in their words, mesmerizing. Now, interestingly enough, going back to March 8th, you may recall that Japan had an earthquake, and the headline from the Associated Press from then, large earthquake hits northeast Japan, no damage. And unfortunately, that was not the end, which we'll get to some of the other updates here in just a moment. But meanwhile, Arkansas drillers say they will halt disposal of fluids because a swarm of earthquakes are happening there. As a nice side note, Synthtopia.com has an interesting free album for you. It's called Tectonic, and it's music generated by earthquakes. Japan halts Pfizer vaccines after four infants die. That is from Reuters. Meanwhile, from MSNBC, alcohol wipes used by hospitals causing deadly infections.
This bacteria literally ate away at this poor boy's brain.
Pictures of Harrison Kothari show a happy, bright-eyed two-year-old. Last year, Kothari had a benign cyst removed from his brain, but his parents say he was healing well. Then, in late November, Kothari's body was rocked by an infection, and in 48 hours, he was dead. Family attorney Jim Perdue believes Kothari's infection came from a contaminated medical device used to drain spinal fluid.
We know this boy had no infection the day before he went into essentially a spiral of brain death. We know that they used these alcohol pads on his lumbar drain that day.
Kothari died at Memorial Hermann Children's Hospital. Perdue says an autopsy showed the toddler died from a bacteria called Bacillus cereus.
This is an extremely rare bacteria and is not found normally in hospitals. It's normally a foodborne bacteria.
But Perdue does not believe the hospital was at fault. Perdue believes a prepackaged alcohol swab used to sterilize Kothari's drain was contaminated. Kothari's parents are suing the maker of that alcohol swab, Wisconsin-based Triad Group.
They are the single largest manufacturer of alcohol prep pads and swab sticks in the world.
Local 2 Investigates obtained a copy of this letter sent by Triad to customers 1 month after Kothari died. The letter informs customers the company was voluntarily recalling all of its alcohol swabs. This month, the FDA issued similar warnings. We also found recalls being issued in Canada and the United Kingdom.
And people need to know about the recall. Not just hospitals and doctors know about the recall, but individual citizens and consumers know about it because it could be in their medicine cabinet today.
Yes, it could. Meanwhile, from the BBC, call to vaccinate against possible H2N2 flu pandemic. Government should launch a vaccination program now to guard against a possible H2N2 flu pandemic, according to an article in the journal Nature. And there's a funny quote in there. I should have highlighted it before, but it's basically one of them asking, God, how can we talk everybody into getting vaccinated against something that doesn't exist? Meanwhile, as Freud rolls over in his grave, psychiatrists replace listening with drugs. Thanks, Big Pharma. More on that from allgov.com. And our last BioWars EnviroHealth note right there. Secretly forced brain-implanted inventor case, no secret to Obama. That is quite the mouthful, but this connects to the bioethics committee that we have discussed on past episodes. So here it is, and that's going into the public record.
of what you could call electronic harassment or no-touch torture?
Thank you. My name is Lisa Becker. I'm also from Wisconsin. I've been a non-consenting test subject in military medical research. I, too, believe my experience is referred to as no-touch torture, utilizing defense technologies. Jonathan Marino, he basically predicted all this a number of years ago in his book on Undue Risk. I'm asking you to help initiate a congressional investigation. We've all come a long way. This is what is needed. We want to have the accounts of this extreme human rights abuse that's going on in our country documented and heard, all of the accounts. We also need what was done during the Clinton administration, which is a major declassification of some of these documents that are hiding what's been going on. I speak for many when I say we've suffered long enough. My personal experience has been 10 years. I've been vilified. I've been ostracized. I've been tortured. I have burns on my body. I'm an American. I have rights. The answer to the question, the big question today, could it happen today? The answer is yes. It is happening today. It is happening for some of us every day. I am begging for you to help us. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this may seem fringe, but it is very real. And we're going to have our friend Harry Sweeney of ProParanoidPress.com back on the show to discuss this microchipping and electronic harassment. So this posting, millions of dead anchovies float to the surface on Redondo Beach, contained all of our related BioWars and Viro Health updates. So the last updates posted at the very bottom concern, at least at the time of its posting, the most recent developments I had, the massive 8.9 magnitude earthquake that rocked Japan, tsunami warnings in at least 20 countries, a tsunami warning issued for my own Oregon coast. And we glance again at Google News to see Japan struggling to cool down nuclear reactor. That's 7 minutes ago from CNN. Japan declares nuclear emergency after earthquake, and on and on. Yes, we'll remind you again, and with the link to my own tweet. Korber report is fine. Quote, my area of Japan was not affected at all, end quote. That's something good that we can at least know and have confirmed with all the other questions that float around that we don't have answers for. Our final post on this episode 209, of course, will contain all the other related Obamasiah police state war horrors updates, but here it is, change you can believe in, and even finally seeing folks on their Facebook page finally saying, I want my vote back. It's like, oh, welcome to 2008. Welcome to you've finally started to figure it out. Welcome to you got tricked. Or, again, as Bill Hicks would say, welcome to your wrong night. Obama issues executive order institutionalizing indefinite detention. Obama issued another executive order, this time one that permits ongoing indefinite detention of Guantanamo detainees while establishing a periodic administrative review process for them. The administration also announced it will lift the ban on bringing new military commissions charges against detainees that don't already have ongoing cases in the substandard system. The ACLU has long called for Guantanamo to be shut down and opposes the indefinite detention of prisoners there, some of whom who have been imprisoned by the U.S. without charges for 9 years and counting. Change-a-luya. Obamasiah issues executive order institutionalizing indefinite detention. Yes, we can.
Finally tonight, the Obama administration reverses course on trials for suspected terrorists. Jeffrey Brown has the story.
Closing down Guantanamo was a top priority for the new Obama administration 2 years ago, but it ran into repeated opposition over holding or trying terrorist suspects in the U.S. And today, the president issued an order that will allow military trials to resume at that U.S. base on the tip of Cuba. Here to tell us about it is Scott Shane of the New York Times. Scott, was this expected? Did the White House feel it had no choice, really, given the strong opposition?
This has been speculated about in news reports, so it wasn't a complete surprise. Since Congress has essentially banned the administration from bringing any of these 172 detainees left at Guantanamo to the United States for trial, the administration really had no choice but to, if it wanted to have trials, to renew military commissions down at the base in Cuba.
Now, what's the immediate impact? I understand there are 172 prisoners still held there. Is there any sense of when trials would resume and who might be first?
There's no precise idea, and they didn't say who would be first. Specifically, they wouldn't say what will happen to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's, of course, the chief planner of the 9/11 attacks. The Obama administration had wanted to bring him and his 9/11 co-defendants to the United States, to New York, actually, for a regular civilian criminal trial. But New York protested, and now they cannot be brought to the U.S. It's unclear whether they will just be held there or will go for military commissions. There is another man named Nashiri, who's the accused plotter of the attack on the USS Cole, the destroyer attack in Yemen in 2000. He is queued up for military commission and is likely to be one of the first people to go before a military commission now that they're starting up again.
Now, the president at the same time reaffirmed his desire to try terror suspects in federal courts, right? I mean, he's resuming the trials at Guantanamo, but he's still making his own position as clear as he can.
Well, that's right. The vast majority of terrorists who've been convicted, of course, since 9/11 have been in federal courts. I believe there are six convictions now in military commissions versus, you know, a couple hundred in federal courts. But at least for the moment, the 172 people in Guantanamo will stay there, and none of those guys will be available for federal trial.
So now, quickly, let's get all our other ridiculous related police state, Obama-sia, and war horrors updates. First, from Danger Room, prisoners help build Patriot missiles. This spring, the UAE is expected to close a deal for $7 billion worth of American arms. Nearly half of the cash will be spent on Patriot missiles, which cost as much as $5.9 million apiece. But what makes those eye-popping sums even more shocking is that some of the workers manufacturing parts for those Patriot missiles are prisoners, earning as little as 23 cents an hour. This story, sourcing back to Minionville.com, with a great article and a great catch from Justin Rohrlich. That's how we roll in the prison industrial complex, but of course that's not all. And we get more from allgov.com. U.S. prisoners build missile parts for Raytheon and Lockmart to sell abroad. But that's not all. Army recruits prisoners to make body armor as well. That's again from Danger Room. Another PSYOP update. Officer claims spinning senators wasn't a PSYOP, and that's basically all we've discovered about this story that we've now been covering for 2 weeks. Or wasn't it a psychological operation? That's what you should ask about all of these stories and all of these things swirling around us. Whether or not it's coming from someone's information operations roadmap. $1.2 trillion spent on the military while the rest of us fight over crumbs. And the last war horrors note, Senator Graham wants Intelligence Chief Clapper gone after he claims Russia and China pose a mortal threat.
New calls in just the last hour for the Director of National Intelligence to resign. Welcome to a brand new hour of America Live, everyone. I'm Megyn Kelly. DNI James Clapper, already criticized for what some perceived as an unfamiliarity with major terror-related events, has apparently done it again. He was testifying this morning at a hearing on worldwide threats faced by the United States and had this exchange with Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Carl Levin just a short time ago.
Which country represents to you that has the intent to be our greatest adversary? Who could do, you know, has the capabilities. I know you've gone through it, but who has the intent?
Probably China.
China. So Donald Trump's right.
If the question is pick one nation state
that has the intent.
No, I said If we didn't, we have a treaty with New START treaty with the Russians. So I guess I would rank them a little lower because of that. We don't have such a treaty with the Chinese.
I'm just as surprised by that answer as I was by your first answer. You're saying that China now has the intent to be a mortal adversary of the United States?
Well, the question is, who, from my vantage, who would, among the nation states, who would pose potentially a greatest, if I have to pick one country, which I'm loath to do because I'm more of a mind to consider their capabilities. So both Russia and China potentially represent a mortal threat to the United States. We're getting into gauging intent, which I really can't do. I don't think either country today has the intent to mortally attack us.
I just want to be real clear. By that measure, we represent the greatest potential threat to both China and Russia. By that measure,
from a capability standpoint,
which is the measure you're using,
yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, now, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham coming out and saying this moments ago.
I don't have confidence that this gentleman understands what his job is all about and how his words affect the world as it is. He couldn't have said a more devastating thing at a more inappropriate time. And this is the third time around. Three strikes, you're out.
Brett Baer is anchor of Special Report right here on the Fox News Channel. Brett, this is the third time for DNI Clapper. The first time he made a statement about, he seemed clueless when Diane Sawyer asked him about the arrest, the terror arrest that had been made that day in London, and they later came out and had to admit he was clueless on that. Then he called the Muslim Brotherhood a secular organization, mostly secular, and went on from there. And now is Lindsey Graham, he's saying third time's, a charm. Three strikes and you're out.
So I want to at least draw your attention to the fact that that was West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin making that statement come out from Intel Chief Clapper that Russia and China pose a mortal threat. Meanwhile, NPR head quits after a fundraiser dubs Tea Party activists seriously racist. And this is another fantastic move on the phony left-right paradigm. And as Lee Rogers points out quite well on RogueGovernment.com, James O'Keefe, the guy behind these latest shenanigans, is a Council for National Policy-trained whore of the priest class elite. Meanwhile, Biden's Moscow visit reaffirms U.S.-Russia reset. More on that from Christian Science Monitor. And the last piece related to all our Congress critters. I've run out of time and don't have time to play this entire clip, but it's a great one because it's the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul together with our own Oregon Congressman Peter DeFazio correctly pointing out that both sides of the fake political paradigm are afraid of being called soft on defense. And of course, remember that all of this is predicated on the official conspiracy theory of 9/11 that even the 9/11 commissioners themselves don't believe. Now let's get our related police state updates. And the last clip we do have time for, we'll put them both together because it's all connected. Miami cops buy a military drone that can see into houses. Meanwhile, Sacramento cops want to tap into business CCTV to deter crime.
High-tech military drone is causing a buzz at the Miami-Dade County Police Department. That's the MAV, or Micro Air Vehicle. It's a loud but effective portable camera system. It looks kind of like a small trash can. It can hover and move to gather real-time information. The military uses the drone to scan a dangerous area before entering. And thanks to a grant, it will help the Miami-Dade Police Department fight crime. Officers say it will also help protect their teams.
You know, if they're going to go into a house or into a backyard, they want to know, are there dogs in the backyard? Is there a place out there? Is there a shed? Things that could be threats to us.
The police department is waiting for final approval from the Federal Aviation Administration to begin using the drone. Wow, it looks so clever. They're all fighting over my turn to use it.
It's a cool toy, too.
No kidding.
The cameras keeping track of crime on some of Sacramento's worst neighborhoods. Sounds like a good idea to some, but there is a new plan by police that has other people up in arms.
Nick Janes is live for us this morning along Del Paso Heights Boulevard with more on the story. Nick, what's the concern?
Well, you know, it's that old debate between privacy versus security. Police say, bottom line, these cameras work to catch criminals. But then you have groups like the ACLU saying it is an invasion of privacy, and they question whether or not the cameras work to deter crime. We know that there are three cameras up on Del Paso Boulevard already. Here's the one right at Del Paso and El Camino. And now the new plan is Sacramento police want to tap into existing cameras elsewhere in the city. These are public and private cameras. They won't say exactly which ones yet because this is still in the works. They're hammering out the final details, but they're going to have more eyes out there on the streets, and they say they won't be watching these cameras live. They'll be reviewing them after the fact if there's a crime committed in the area. We had to ask them, though, how many cameras are you talking about here?
Well, if you can imagine, there's probably hundreds of cameras in the city of Sacramento by private and public entities. And to be able to tap into just some of those will add to our eyes on the streets.
And he also says it'll be helpful to get that footage more quickly. Say, for example, a gas station camera. If there's a crime committed there, police would be able to directly get that video without first having to actually go there and physically retrieve it from the owner, something that will save them time and possibly catch the criminal sooner. Still, though, you're going to have groups that are awfully concerned about this, and you're going to have to stay tuned to this one because we expect to learn a whole lot more maybe in a month or so when police are expected to announce which cameras and how many, and then we'll kind of see what the response is from the other side as well.
The old Big Brother controversy, just a different story.
Yep, another Big Brother controversy. That's also funny. It's like a toy. Oh, I can't wait to play with it. Now, as a quick reminder for the last word on CCTV, go to youtube.com/Corby Report. But furthermore, CCTV watches a British person 70 times a day. Meanwhile, unmanned spy drones and facial recognition cameras could soon be the UK norm. That's from The Telegraph and Press TV, respectively. Back here in the North American Union, Arizona considers a bill to create a state army. More on that from allgov.com. The immigration, drug war, psychological operations spawn the latest homeland stupidity checkpoints in Texas. More on that from Deadline Live. ATF program let hundreds of guns go to drug cartels. Surprise, surprise. Now, airline luggage fees equal more carry-ons. Equals more TSA inspections. Equals $250 million. Billions. It's ballooning. As I would imagine, tons of people are going to turn away from flying on planes. And, of course, could that be all a part of the scheme? Because, hey, peon, you don't get to travel when you want. An interesting three-part series from Threat Level on the naked body scanners. Part 1, court likely to uphold constitutionality of nude airport scanners, which we did hit a couple of weeks ago when it first came out. But the second and third parts, nude airport scanners, are they safe and are they effective? And a piece that kind of ties that all together, again from Threat Level, court unlikely to halt nude airport body scanners as they're scanning pregnant women, accusing them of being terrorists. But on the good note, The Guardian reporting the fight back against TSA tyranny begins. Meanwhile, The Smoking Gun reporting on the company suspending its Homeland Stupidity honeypot site over their overly creepy pedophile content. Another good note, a suspect is in custody. At least we can hope this is a good note. In that MLK Day bombing attempt in Spokane, Washington, that doesn't really get very much coverage, but we have given you every bit of update since the new year on that story. Meanwhile, from the viralglobe.co.uk, UK protesters civilly arrest a county court judge, and is that something we're going to see more and more of, a citizen's arrests? And our final note, on this posting, Obama issues executive order institutionalizing indefinite detention, and we're getting all our related police state updates. The last note from FederalComputerWeek.com, DHS postpones Real ID compliance again. And there it all is, my friends. Let's take a quick glance at our active twitter.com/media monarchy feed. And again, huge thanks to all the folks who help spread the word about the show through just another tool, just another bell and whistle. If these are the town squares that people are going to populate, then that's where we're going to go to spread and share information. So we mentioned the tsunami warning issued for the Oregon coast. We mentioned the confirmation that James Corbett is A-OK. We've also got interesting media and meme notes. Julie Taymor out as the director of the embattled, horrible idea of a Broadway show, Spider-Man. We've got tweets from Webster Tarpley. We've got Soma FM. We've got Reverend Billy Talon, Mike Rupert's CollapseNet, and Robert Fisk and other analysts saying that at the time, going back to the 5th of March, that Saudi Arabia is about to pop. But again, as we turn back to the latest news, Day of Rage, which of course was a term and a tactic founded and put all around by the intelligence-connected fronts like Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, the Days of Rage. Of course, all of these are foundation-funded uprisings. Strings pulled, buttons pushed, people fall into line, and it's all a psychological operation. So we hop back to the news page to see tsunami alert sparks evacuation from Hawaii to Easter Island. Crescent City, Santa Cruz hit hard by tsunami from Japan quake. Japan warns of small radiation leak from quake hit plant. And meanwhile, the Obama Sai had a press conference this morning that, of course, offers any aid that we can give. And of course, we've always got a military carrier ready to speed to wherever it is in the world. Obama cites positive trend in economic growth as earthquake fallout looms. And of course, he also notes they're going to tighten the noose around Gaddafi, that guy that they've helped fund and has pretty much run the most industrialized nation in Africa that all suddenly now is evil and demonized and we have to take them down. We just need to figure out what color they're going to call these color revolutions. Sinister forces on the grand chessboard, my friends. The last two things I want to note is the reminder about community. First, go check out strangeletter.net. We heard the track, Here Comes a Chopper. And also, I implore you, if you were going to donate to Media Monarchy in this week, go over to indiegogo.com/philosophy101 and please help support action, real positive solutions. That's always the question asked at the end of things. It's like, but what are we going to do about all this? We're going to get together and we're going to share information and we're going to fund all of each other's operations. That's what I'm hopeful for, my friends, and that's hopefully why you turn in each week. And I love you for it. It's 3/11/2011. This has been episode 209 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.